Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Today I am excited to share with you the culmination of our strategic planning process and repositioning effort that will transform the future of our organization to better serve our pork producers.
He's the new CEO of the National Pork Producers Council. That's Brian Humphreys at World Pork Expo.
Our new logo is symbolic of where we are heading as an organization as we take important steps today to achieve groundbreaking successes tomorrow. This symbol is a commitment. This transformation and energized focus will help propel the industry forward in an aligned, energized, and strategically driven for producers under new leadership, guided by long-range strategic plan, and fueled by new funding support.
This is Agriculture Today.
This hearing of the Subcommittee on General Farm Commodities and Risk Management, entitled A 2022 Review of the Farm Bill, Economic Perspectives on Title I Commodities and Title 11 Crop Insurance, will come to order.
Representative Sherry Bustos from Illinois is the chairwoman of the subcommittee. That hearing held in the House Ag Committee on Thursday.
I want to say welcome and thank you for joining today's hearing. After brief opening remarks, members will receive testimony from our witnesses today, and then the hearing will be open to questions. In consultation with the ranking member and pursuant to Rule 11E, I want to make members of the subcommittee aware that other members of the full committee may join us today. I'm pleased to chair this hearing as producers around the country are in different stages of the growing season and dealing with varying weather conditions. Winter wheat farmers in the South are starting harvest, with many dealing with historic drought conditions. At the same time, corn, soybean, oilseed, and sugar beet growers further to the north are still trying to get their crops in amid widespread flooding. Since the 2018 Farm Bill was written, farmers have experienced the economic impacts of a trade war with China, marketing and supply chain disruptions caused by the pandemic, historic weather events, and now extreme volatility in commodity and input markets caused in part by Putin's unjustified and unprovoked war in Ukraine. In particular, the most consistent issue I hear from farmers and stakeholders back home in Illinois is the price and availability of fertilizer, not only for their production this year, but also what it could mean for next year's crop as well. All of these conditions have had implications for how our Farm Bill programs have been functioning. And our intent with today's hearing is to gather input from this panel of experts on what these conditions have meant for how our commodity programs have worked as a safety net and the role that the federal crop insurance program has played in helping producers manage risk. During the past year and a half, this subcommittee has been focused on understanding the situation on the ground and the needs of our producers. We held a hearing on the efficacy of the farm safety net almost a year ago and heard important testimony from producers, a crop insurance agent, and an ag economist. And it is clear the situation is much different today than it was at that time. And earlier this year, we heard from Undersecretary Robert Bonney about the state of our Farm Bill programs. Today, we have the privilege to hear from a distinguished panel of agricultural economists on the state of play, and I look forward to your testimony.
The hearing featured four economists, including Dr. Joe Jansen, University of Illinois ag economist.
I think an appropriate measure is, a starting point is the level of price. And looking this is a longstanding debate about whether we should have sort of flexible or fixed parameters. It's something that I think it would, if Congress wants to step up and say that we know what the long run level of price is that we would like to at which we'd like to fix the safety net, then the PLC reference price is that parameter in current policy and likely to be something similar in policy going forward. So we need to decide what that price is. And it's important to remember that that's the season average price, not the price on one day, but the price over the course of an entire year. And I think it's important to recognize that we have a situation right now where prices are high, but people are worried about price declines. But it's important to sort of wait until those price declines are realized and we understand what net farm income is in a given year before we sort of define whether there's been a realized loss that's worth having some sort of policy intervention to cover.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So we see in the diagnostic lab, we do a lot of work with veterinarians as our clients and then their clients, and we see two syndromes. One is a early spring pasture pneumonia outbreak where it's between April and the end of June, and then it goes away.
That's K-State veterinarian Dr. Greg Hanselcheck. He's talking about two syndromes with bovine respiratory disease, or BRD.
And then the other syndrome starts end of August, September, into October. So there are two distinct time periods where we see the outbreaks.
He says researchers are trying to identify the catalyst.
Well, we don't know, but there's some things that we think are associated with starting these diseases. So early pasture pneumonia, it's typically in herds that do things like estrus synchronization, or they process castrate and brand large groups of animals at the same time. And what we think is that the calves are exposed to large amounts of adult cow bovine respiratory disease pathogens during this processing and during this synchronization. And then when they go to pasture, the incubation period, that's what brings it on. For those herds in late that have late issues, a lot of those herds creep feed, and maybe that's the same thing. We've got a lot of calves in a very confined area around the creep feeder. Other things we think about is the stress of temperature fluctuations, cool at night, warm in the day, and then sometimes we'll have dry conditions where there's dust, and we know that dust can harm the lungs and predispose these animals to bovine respiratory disease.
You'd like to think those producers who don't do a great job would be most at risk, but he says not the case.
That's the most frustrating thing about it. At least the cases that we've dealt with in the last two or three or four years is typically herds that deal with this issue are what we would consider to be very well-managed herds, meaning they're on a good nutrition program, they're on a really good vaccination program, but we still have this ongoing issue. And most of these herds, it's not a one-time, one-year outbreak of BRD. It seems like it continues every year about the same time in the same group of calves. So, yeah, it's a very frustrating because it's the well-managed herds we see most of this in.
So if that's the case, who's most at risk?
There's several studies out there, and the herds we deal with, it kind of shows the same thing, is that we see a higher incidence in male calves, and that's true in other species. It looks like other species of males are more predisposed to respiratory disease. Calves from two-year-old dams, they seem to be at a higher risk, and that kind of makes sense because the two-year-olds, the heifers, their colostrum quality is not going to be as good as a cow. They may lack the mothering ability, or they may go through a dystocia. We know that calves that experience dystocia, their immune systems aren't going to function as well. Other risk factors are larger herds. And then, like I said, we know that that's true for probably all our diseases. One of the big risk factors are herds that bring in calves from outside sources. So we're talking about herds that bring in calves that may have a different strain of these pathogens or maybe a high load of these pathogens. Those herds are at a much higher risk of this disease than others. We've mentioned estrus synchronization. And then other thing is herds that experience a diarrhea problem in neonatal calves, they're typically going to be at a higher risk of having respiratory disease later on. And that could have to do with management. It could have to do with immune system and all kinds of things. So those are what we think are the major risk factors for this disease in herds.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
There are a lot of variables in farming, right? Soil types, climate, moisture, but the bottom line is that agriculture is a business. And at the end of the day, it's not what you bring in, it's the margin you're left with. And I have tremendous concerns with where we're heading right now.
Ranking member of the House Ag Committee from Pennsylvania, G.T. Thompson.
On that note, while prices for most commodities are at high levels and some paint a rosy picture for agriculture, I think that's mostly by folks who really don't understand it, that farming is a business, and at the end of the day, it's the margin you're left with, if any. I'm not optimistic about this. Net farm income projections are based on an expectation of average yields, which is not a given. Additionally, it will only take some softening of prices before producers may be underwater. As you've well stated, commodity prices can drop overnight, but input costs, once they're up there, it's difficult to see them lower.
Answering the question of a permanent disaster program, co-director of the Ag Food Policy Center at Texas A&M, Joe Outlaw.
In general, the crop insurance industry and the products that are available are sufficient. What we have found over time is that natural disasters don't worry about what policy bought. And so it has been a case where there has been added help provided to cover portion of the deductible area. It is certainly within logical thinking to think that if we've done this 5 years in a row, likely we're going to continue to do this. There's going to be natural disasters, and it would be helpful if there was a plan in place or a set of rules in place of exactly how it was going to work so that producers would understand what kind of help they might get if this happened. And not leave it to chance or whether you get something passed.
Another ag economist testifying before the subcommittee, University of Illinois' Joe Jansen.
The issue in developing a standing disaster assistance program is always how to define what constitutes a disaster and when will the government step in and when will they not. And that's why these programs have been ad hoc. And the crop insurance program does a good job of defining the types of losses that will be covered. A standing disaster assistance program looks a lot like insurance, but covering the things that we didn't know about the future.
One question from a subcommittee member was whether or not we needed an ARC PLC decision to begin with.
In the 2014 Farm Bill, that decision was a one-time for the life of the Farm Bill decision, and it really stressed producers out trying to make that decision for the next 5 years, much less what's going to happen this year. The 2018 Farm Bill changed that and made it an annual decision after the first 2 years, and producers would have to decide on an annual basis which of those two products they wanted to go to. All I'm saying is take the decision away from them and allow them, if there was a benefit to be had, allow them to have the higher of the two. A lot of times they're both going to be negative, or I mean not negative, but zero. And so, but they're good at farming and they don't want to make this decision and they're really, it puts a lot of undue stress on them. Just give them whichever would be higher and it can be scored that way.
That was a subcommittee on general commodity, subcommittee of the House Ag Committee, hearing on Thursday. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We've talked some about Russia and production costs. One of my farmers sent me these numbers. In May of 19, he was paying $248 a ton for nitrogen. In May of 22, just a few days ago, he paid $682 a ton. I think as we talk about Russia and even Belarus, we have to remember that Russia is the number one producer of nitrogen, and Russia and Belarus are number two and number three, I believe, in potash production, which we all depend on for the yields that we have in this country.
Georgia representative and a member of the House Ag Committee, Austin Scott.
And so as we've touched on higher operating revenue in 22, we have to have a long-term outlook for production agriculture inside this country. And so the 22 forecasts are based on expected yields. Inputs have gone up, particularly fertilizer and diesel. I know many farmers are looking to save costs by applying less nutrients. We had an issue where Union Pacific curtailed fertilizer shipments. Now, I understand that they undid that. But certainly, if you don't have the ability to get the nutrients in the crop in a timely manner, then that impacts yield.
Now, USDA has rolled out a program called ERP, Emergency Relief Program. Sean Wade's with Plains Cotton Growers.
So the Emergency Relief Program, or ERP, is a successor program to disaster assistance that was provided through the WIP and WIP Plus programs previously. These are not programs that are part of the Farm Bill. These are actually ad hoc programs that Congress has approved to deal with, individual weather events or a combination of weather events during or through a couple of different calendar years. So the ERP program is covering, everything from derechos up in the Midwest to severe winter storms and drought and excessive flooding just in different parts of the country, where those different events have impacted producers. And most importantly for producers out here, this is a program that's going to cover the 2020 crop year, where we had just a really significant drought impact throughout the High Plains. And so, it put a lot of producers behind the eight ball economically. Certainly last year's crop was good and prices were improved, but, coming out of the 2020 crop, it was still pretty much everything they could do to get close to climbing back to the level of the water surface. So, we're very thankful that Congress is and USDA, that Congress first passed this bill, and that happened way back in September of 2020, the end of September. But USDA is rolling that program out, and producers have been receiving those applications and getting those filled in, completed and turned back in. And this will be a pretty timely influx of benefits to growers who are, like I said, they're looking at, what could be a very expensive 2021 crop. And so this will help immensely in their ability to kind of move forward with the 2022 production year as well. So just a very timely program. We're very thankful to the USDA folks for getting that rolled out. Not without some, some complication. There's a little bit of confusion about how it works, but generally speaking, it's been pretty smooth, and growers have been able to get those applications turned around and get that money flowing in a pretty quick fashion. So, we're just thankful for that, and it's going to be a huge help to the industry throughout the country. From north to south, east to west, there's just about every part of the country has been impacted.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that the ag economy is the rural economy.
From Georgia, member of the House Ag Committee, Austin Scott.
And for those of us who live in rural America who do not farm, we recognize the impact of agriculture on our daily lives. Between weather, global events, skyrocketing inflation, and regulatory uncertainty, farmers and ranchers today are struggling to make sound business decisions in the face of extreme uncertainty. The provisions we established in the 2018 Farm Bill were meant to help farmers manage some of that risk. Today, I'm looking forward to hearing from our witnesses about how those policies are working. While all Americans are dealing with the impact of high and rising inflation, I would argue that the farm sector of the economy is the one that's most vulnerable to these impacts. As JFK said, they buy everything at retail, sell it at wholesale, and pay the freight both ways. Many ag commodities are fetching high prices, but the cost of inputs continue to skyrocket. Transportation is more expensive, and labor is increasingly hard to find. Any softening of crop prices could spell disaster for the rural economy because production costs continue to rise. I'm extremely frustrated with an administration who's absolutely tone-deaf to what is happening on the farm. Senior officials suggest that the remedy for high gas prices is for more Americans to drive electric vehicles, or the USDA's most recent announcement in which they seek to transform the food system one rooftop garden at a time. This administration has clearly shown their lack of regard for the full-time farmers and ranchers that produce our food. And instead of going on Jimmy Kimmel, perhaps the administration could remove the excise tax on diesel fuel and reduce the cost of farming. There are certainly many factors that contribute to the skyrocketing production cost, but it's undeniable that many of these wounds are self-inflicted by our current political leadership. Yesterday, I spoke to a farmer that I represent. He told me that during the 2019 planting season, he was paying $2.71 a gallon for truck fuel, $2.08 a gallon for tractor fuel. His quote yesterday was $5.55 a gallon for truck fuel and $5.21 a gallon for tractor fuel. Those increases of 104.8% and 150.5% respectively would be higher had the governor of the state of Georgia not removed Georgia's tax on diesel. Crop protection tools that farmers rely on are under assault from the left-wing enviro activists Yet the Solicitor General filed a brief in the Ninth Circuit that fundamentally undermines EPA's preemptive authority over crop protection tools. The list goes on of the damage this administration is doing. I'm interested in the testimony of our witnesses today, particularly how it relates to the impact inflation and production costs will have on farmers, ranchers, and if our current safety net is inadequate. But instead of only looking for solutions via more federal assistance, the subcommittee also needs to pay attention to policies and actions that increase the cost of growing food and work to remedy that.
He was speaking at a recent House Ag subcommittee hearing. Also there, the co-director of the Ag and Food Policy Center, Dr. Joe Outlaw.
I look at the cost of production as basically something that tells me we need to cover a good portion of the cost if we're going to keep people producing in this country. And one of the things that our center has done for various members of Congress over time was look at a lot of different ways at trying to attach escalators to the reference price, for example, that would take into consideration cost increases, and so that producers wouldn't be caught flat whenever prices. What we know is going to happen, Mr. Chairman, is that the prices are going to decline, but the input prices are going to stay up for a while, and they always do. And that's going to leave people in a what we call a cost price squeeze. And so either looking at some sort of margin or building in the ability to move, ratchet up the reference price with costs is my suggestion.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We've seen some regions with a little bit of improvement. Central Oklahoma, one of those areas that has received some rain. So kind of around the edges, we've whittled at the drought a little bit, but the conditions are still, in general, very bad, sort of at record levels for this time of the year, whether you look at range and pasture conditions or just look at the drought monitor in general.
Oklahoma State livestock economist Dr. Darrell Peel. He does say 50% of the nation's herd remains in jeopardy of the drought.
And so, and at this point in time, we're far enough into the growing season that producers, I think, really now have to sort of look at the reality that we're just not going to make the pastures and the hay that we normally do. And so we could actually see, more impacts here in the next few weeks. In fact, we may have had the beginnings of it this last week. The most recent weekly data on cow slaughter showed a sharp increase in beef cow slaughter. Now, it's a little early to tell whether that's just a weekly, volatility or whether that's a little bit more of a trend, but it's certainly something we'll be watching as we go forward.
And with this drought really continuing, he says we could be looking at record high hay prices.
Hay prices are already high. We're expecting them to go higher. The May 1 hay stocks, May 1 is the beginning of the hay marketing year. Were down nationally, but they were down much more significantly in these severe drought regions. So we're not making it. And increasingly what I hear from producers that are not in drought areas, they've got plenty of moisture, but with fertilizer prices at the level they're at, they're cutting back on fertilizer use. They're not going to produce as much hay, even if they have the moisture to do it. So I think we're looking at significant forage shortages in general, or limitations at least, across much of the country for this year.
So what might the rest of 2022 hold?
We've got all these drought issues. We're probably moving cattle into the market sooner rather than later, especially for the cows, but even for the feeder cattle to some extent. We've got large feedlot inventories that we're going to be working through. So in the short run, we've got lots of supply, if you will, that's going to kind of limit that market. Longer term, of course, the implication is that once we do that, then the numbers get appreciably tighter, and that happens either late this year or maybe as we move into next year, we start to see those numbers tighten up, and we could see, and of course, if you look at the futures prices for both feeder and live cattle futures, we've priced in a fairly significant trend up here into the last part of this year and on into next year, and I think that's clearly what we're going to see with the impacts that we're having on cattle inventories this year.
And a little closer to home, what might we see over the next week or so?
On the Fed cattle markets, I think we'll probably see kind of steady she goes to a little bit weaker perhaps. In general, the market's going to be looking at kind of a post-Memorial Day analysis of what that was. We'll be looking at those wholesale beef cuts and, in general, the boxed beef market for some cues there in the next couple of weeks. But I think the Fed cattle market, again, seasonally, will probably be sort of steady to a little bit weaker. The feeder cattle markets, particularly the big feeder cattle, have benefited from the fact that corn prices have moderated, at least on the futures market, a bit. And so that is helping support, and the feeder cattle futures in response to that have been significantly higher over the last couple of weeks. So that continues to support that market a bit.
And for the rest of the summer?
Probably as much as anything. We normally expect to see cash-fed cattle prices slip from the spring highs as we go into the summer here. So I don't know that it's a particularly out-of-line kind of a movement that we're seeing right now, but certainly we're watching it because there's a lot of potential things that could impact this market.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Sustainability, we were the beginning program for sustainability before it was even popular.
Terry Walters is the president for the National Pork Producers Council.
We've implemented production practices for efficiency, reducing our carbon footprint, better production practices for animals. When I started the industry, 16 pigs per sow per year, very common, was the industry average. We're knocking on the door of 30. 30 pigs per sow per year is because we care about what we do and we're ready to adapt to change. But we believe, we know, under the work and advisement with our collaboration with our veterinary industry, that we're prepared to be there and we're doing it right.